Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. We are going to talk today a little bit about activism. Why activism? And how does that tie into healing and growing and evolving and developing? Well, a lot of you out there, I know, you have feeling sometimes disempowered, feeling like you're not winning what you want to win. It's feeling like in the country, there's separation between us. There's divisiveness going on. There's a lot of things happening. How do you navigate that so that you feel okay inside of you, no matter what's happening on the outside? Well, we're going to talk about that today. We're going to give you some strategies to step in to your own personal power, feel better maybe about what's going on in the world, what's going on in your own personal life, and be able to navigate the complicated world that we live in. I've got a powerful activist on my show today who's going to be able to guide you through some of the ways that you can feel empowered. You know, I think from my point of view, when we feel disempowered, we feel like a victim. We feel like we don't have choice. We feel like we're just stuck, right? Well, I've learned over the years of my 30 plus years of working with individuals and organizations to help them to get unstuck in whatever way they're stuck. I've learned that we all have within us the power, the passion, the source that is in all of us. It's born in innately in us, this thing called courage that we all have that we can tap into to move us past our limitations. Now, it's not without deep compassion that I realize that, you know, some of my friends, some of my associates out there are suffering. They go through hard times when things don't go their way, whether it be politically, whether it be in their home life, their personal life. I get it. I really do. So if that's you and you're feeling like a little, you're feeling sad right now, you know, something's going on, it's okay. You're good. Be with your feelings, because our feelings are what help us understand what we need to do next. So if that's you, pay attention to this show. And by the way, how we grow this show is by you telling your friends and family. So if you know somebody that's feeling a little stuck, feeling a little down, feeling like disempowered, this is a great show to watch today. All right, pass it on to them. All right, listen, I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have my guest, and we'll go from there. Welcome back, everybody, to the Heal It Show. I'm your host, Ken D. Foster. I have a very special guest today, Frank. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
Yeah, Frank's last name is Frank Forensich. Frank Forensich. Did I get that right, Frank?
That's right, Forensich.
Forensich. Frank is a martial artist. He's a educator and explorer who is deeply committed to understanding and enhancing the human condition. His black belt ratings in karate and aikido, combined with his expeditions to Africa to study human origins, have given him a profound understanding of our species and its evolution. Frank's been invited to speak at the prestigious venues such as Google, Stanford University, the Ancestral Health Symposium, where he shared his thoughts on the intricate relationship between health, stress, and activism. Hardly wait to get into this interview. It's great. So let me dive into your story. You've got quite a story where you're educated. You've gone to Africa to find out about our origins. How does all that tie into activism as medicine?
Oh boy, that's we could talk for hours.
Good.
my origin story begins at the martial arts. So I was a young man in my early 20s, and I just fell in love with the martial art scene, the dojo, my sensei, my teachers, and I did the whole journey, and it was fantastic. I was completely turned on. I went to the dojo every night and studied as hard as I could. And I also fell in love with the human body itself. And I began to study everything I could. It dovetailed with my courses in human biology at Stanford. And that led me to explore human history. And I wanted to know, where did my body come from? And that's why I went to Africa, and I was able to go out with the Bushmen and have a look at the ancestral environment, see the kind of world that we evolved in. And I just had this insatiable hunger to understand my body and how it works.
Well, you know, in this day and age, I go to the grocery store and I look at the packages and I go, wow, is this highest and best to put into my body? So I think what you're talking about is really important about how my mind works, how my body works, how it fits into the, to what's going on in the world and my own evolution. Let's just start there.
Okay. Well, for me, the central topic in so much of this is stress. And this is underrated, you might say. The conventional narrative around stress is that it's an individual problem with individual solutions. And this is all over the media. We see it in popular press everywhere, that stress is a thing that afflicts individuals, but you can fix it if you follow the formula which they give you. And it's pretty well known, this formula, where you need to exercise more, you need to sleep better, you need to have better social relationships and all these things. You need to meditate. And if you do those things, you can dampen your stress. And that's all good advice, except for the fact that stress is a social experience. So in other words, your autonomic nervous system is not simply your own. We're constantly exchanging ideas and emotions, feelings with other human beings. And so stress is widespread throughout the system now. And that's what we need to understand. It has consequences, not just for our own personal health, but for our cognition and our behavior. And that's what's missing. That's what we rarely think about that. But you can see it in our politics. You can see it in the mood of the country right now. The decisions we make, I believe, are driven not so much by ideology, but by the stress that we feel in our bodies.
Well, you know, the quantum mechanics scientists, the quantum physicists, the neuroscientists, they've all come together with a conclusion, whether they're studying the macro of the universe or the micro, and that is everything is connected. So what you're saying is this stress seems to be a collective experience that we're all experiencing as we start to tune into the different mediums or the different social groups we're at. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, absolutely. And the consequences are really profound. And really, we're just beginning to understand this. So, for example, when you are under stress, there is a tendency to contract. And whether it's a physical, actual postural contraction or a cognitive and spiritual contraction, it's very similar, of course, because mind, body are parts of the same thing. There's also a really strong tendency to revert to the familiar. So we want to go back. Things are ambiguous, things are difficult and challenging. So we want to go back to the last place that we really understood. And that's, I think, really easy to see in modern culture and in our politics as well. So we tend to hoard things more when we're under stress. We revert to toxic forms of tribalism. We're more interested in ganging up with the people who we believe will support us. There's a whole host of these things. We're more xenophobic. We're more neophobic. We lapse into what's called safetyism. Hmm. So it's all about protecting the self. And all of those things go contrary to what we're trying to create.
But see, it's hard from my point of view, and I've been working as a life coach, a business strategist for many years, and it's very difficult, if not impossible, to be under stress and being in a creative space at the same time. They contradict each other.
Right. And the way I put it is that when we're under stress, we lapse into cliche. So cliche is simply the process. You're trying to be creative. You're trying to write something or say something, and you're under stress. So what do? You revert to what other people are doing, and you revert to familiar ideas, familiar imagery, that kind of thing. And you simply copy and paste it, if you will. And this is a contrary to creativity. And the more stress we're under, the more we revert to cliche.
It's a big topic. I mean, maybe we're going to need another couple shows for this because, you know, when I think of stress, I mean, there's environmental stresses, there's social stresses, personal stresses, relationship stresses, business stresses, all kinds of different ways that the outside environment or the inner environment can create stress. What say you to that?
Right. And if you think about the scientific definition here, the people who study this, they say that stress responses are triggered by a perceived threat to the organism. And so you take a laboratory animal and you threaten that animal in some way, it's going to trigger a stress response. But it's even bigger than that because we are social animals and we depend on a life support system that if that is threatened, we're also going to trigger a stress response. So if my tribe is threatened in some way, my group is threatened, or my habitat is threatened in some way.
And what I'm experiencing, we just had an election right now and I'm working with people and some people are joyous because they're party won. Other people are in a place where some were very sad. Some were like angry. Some were, I think my point is I think we have different responses to an outside stimulus. Some go to depression, some go to elation, some go to anger. There's a lot of different responses that people have. What say you on that?
Well, absolutely. There's huge individual variation here. And for me personally, I found it to be a catastrophe. And I have felt all these emotions that are common,
yeah,
including despair, grief, anger, the whole thing. And it's something that personally I have to process, I have to metabolize, and I have to trust my body to metabolize.
And it's interesting because, you know, 4 years ago, if you're on the other side, right? You know, that group felt the same way as this group does today. So, you know, one group feel, you know, it depends on what side you're on, how you process those emotions. I think the key is, though, sometimes when people are, not sometimes, many times, when we feel threatened, we go to blame or shame or guilt or a place of depression or a place of anger. Okay, you know, and that's kind of the human experience, but how do we transcend that? How do we move past that?
Well, I think one way to understand what's happening right now, even before the election, I'd say over the course of the last 20 years, is that as society has become more complex, more pressures on everyone, people often experience frustration and even defeats. And this ties into a concept called learned helplessness. And a lot of people have heard about this. It's simply when an animal, a non-human animal or a human animal, experiences a string of defeats, they come eventually to assume a state of helplessness. And they tend to assume that they are powerless and that whatever the next challenge is, they're not going to be able to rally for it because they've suffered this string of defeats. And if that applies to you, you might tend to think, well, I am powerless. There's nothing I can do, even when faced by a routine challenge. And this, of course, is related to depression. And I think a lot of people are suffering this now. If you have a string of defeats, it's easy to fall into that trap.
I think it applies to a lot of people today. And you know, I've worked with individuals in that capacity for many, many decades. And, you know, we all have those feelings. You know, I don't think anybody at any point in their life ever, you know, had this life where they didn't feel defeated. They didn't have, challenges. But my experience is that when defeat comes, when we feel that place, that is the time for us to tune in. And it's, pain is a great motivator. Suffering is a great motivator of mankind. When we feel it, you know, in a healthy way, we realize that we're not victims, that we have to change, adjust, grow, or develop. Or I think we're going to go into get active. Activate what's going on. Anyway, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more discussion on this. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
UK Health Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'll be right back with my guest, Frank Ferencich, in just a minute. I want to remind our listening audience out there, if you're watching this program right now and you are being moved, you are understanding that this is a program to uplift your spirits, to give you the tools and strategies for you to change, develop, and grow. If you like that, we encourage you to share that with a family member, a friend, or associate, or your business group. This is how we grow a show. This is how we all uplift and upshift all each one of us. Also, we want to remind you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. All right, back to my guest, Frank Ferencich. And Frank is an activism. He's an activist. He's an educator. He's an explorer who's deeply committed to understanding and enhancing the human condition. Right before the break, I was, you know, talking a little bit about, you know, getting out of this place where I think a lot of people feel it. You know, you have an election. If you're on the losing side, you're probably going through some emotions. If you're on the winning side, great, you're going through the elation this time. But, you know, how do we master our emotions, Frank, and get into that place where we feel empowered?
Yes, this is a great topic for me because a lot of my work is in environmental activism. And that's a domain where you lose a lot of battles. You suffer defeats over and over again. It's an occupational hazard, you might say, of being in that line of work. And so at some point you've got to grapple with this because you're losing again and again.
Yeah.
And that brings us to an ancient spiritual teaching. And this is the difference between journeys and destinations. And obviously, if you put all your eggs on the destination in that basket, you're going to suffer defeats and you are going to be unhappy. And a lot of activists grapple with this. So instead, what you have to do is put your focus on the journey, the quality of the journey of showing up all the time and accepting the fact that, yes, you're going to lose some big battles along the way. But the journey can be really fulfilling and rewarding regardless.
Yeah.
And my big mentor on this is the coach John Wooden, the famous basketball coach.
Yeah.
And he emphasized this with his athletes all the time. For people who don't know, this is a few decades back when he was doing his work. But he coached at UCLA, and he had this fantastic string of victories and coached all these superstars. And his emphasis was always on the quality of practice. It was not on the outcome of the games. And that was his teaching. So he really was a spiritual teacher who happened to be playing basketball. And he's a big inspiration for me.
Yeah, he's an inspiration for me too. And I think, you know, that philosophy of, you know, focusing on the now, focusing on what you're doing right now to improve yourself, to grow, to develop yourself. And, you know, games come and games go. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. And that's a healthy attitude, you know, but it's not necessarily about winning or losing. Are you doing your best? Are you in a place where if you don't like what's going on right now? Yeah, I was having a discussion with another lady earlier this morning, and you know, we were talking about the election and what was going on. And, you know, a lot of people feel disempowered, but I believe that this is a great time for you to use that disempowerment to, you know, get involved in your local community. I believe your local community politics impacts our lives a lot more many times than the national. So it's like, how do we step into that and maybe get into that piece, right? I also believe there's another piece that you're kind of skating around, but I think we ought to mention. It's do you have, you know, passion comes from purpose. So when you're aligned with a purpose that, like you are, John, with the environmental issues, you got a purpose there. You know, you know what your purpose is, and you're moving that purpose. So no matter what happens, you hit a lot of defeats, a lot of battles. You still got that purpose driving us. What do you say to that?
Right. Well, there's a Japanese word, ikigai. Ikigai, and that refers to a person's meaning and purpose. It's very simple. that's the reason to get out of bed in the morning. And it's a great idea, but it's also been tested empirically. People who study public health have looked at groups of people who have more or less meaning and purpose. And it turns out that people who have a stronger sense of meaning and purpose actually live longer and have better outcomes when they have disease or injury. So it's not just a mystical idea or something in your head. It's a health promoting part of your experience. And we all need to check in.
I love that. You know, I interviewed a lady here in the San Diego area at one point that had a homeless. She's working with the homeless. And I asked her, I said, why do people get homeless? And I thought she'd give me the typical answer. Well, you know, it's drugs and alcohol and that type of thing. She gave me another answer. She said, well, most of the people that go homeless have lost their connections. Have lost their, of course, we're talking purpose, but connections here. They've lost their connection to the church, to their society, to their family, to a relationship. And that's the cause, the main cause. So let's talk about, because you're an activist, you know, activism is medicine. And a part of being active is connecting to community and stepping out of yourself in service. How do people heal themselves when they do that?
You hear a lot of therapists talk, and they always say, build community. That's one of their main talking points, is to build community. And the way I see it, of course you have to reach out. Of course you have to expose yourself. Of course you have to take some risks with people to build those connections. But I go even bigger. I see three circles of life support around the human animal. And these are very easy to understand. You can make a drawing, make a little stick figure with the human animal, and then you can have three circles around that person. And the first circle is habitat. And obviously that's a life supporting system around you. And you want to connect with that by spending more time in nature. That's clear. The second circle around you is tribe, community, people, and that's a life support system too. You want to connect with that. And the final circle around you is your sense of meaning and purpose contained in narrative, contained in the story that you tell about yourself and the world. So those three circles of life supports, you can focus on those, build those connections, and you're going to feel a lot safer in the world. And that's, I think, that's the key to all of this.
That is the key to all of us, you know, and I, you know, when we feel safe, when we're in that secure place, we make better choices, we take different actions, and we feel empowered. And when we're in a place where we're not feeling safe, we're feeling something's off, we're feeling, I think one of the keys that I've learned over the years, there's no such thing as destiny, okay? We create our own destiny. That's the bottom line. And so if we're in a place where we're feeling disempowered or unsafe, that's the time of introspection, to look within our own selves and say, all right, the good news is most likely you either put yourself in that situation or you created it in some way. And if you did, then the good news is you can get out of that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I think today, in today's world, sometimes there's a lot of people out there that don't feel empowered, and they want to feel empowered. And they, here's what I'm getting at. I want to know your ways that you go about empowering yourself and others to step out of that place where they don't feel safe. They feel like a victim. They feel like something's wrong. Now, before you do that, I got to take a quick break, unfortunately. And I also, Frank has a book out, and I want to talk to him about that book. So don't go away. We're going to talk about his book and where you can get some of these downloads that he's gotten so that you can really upshift your life in many great ways. All right. So I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'm talking with Frank Ferencic. And Frank has an amazing book out I'm going to get to right now. But Frank, what are the maybe one or two or three ways that people can, you know, if they're feeling lost or insecure or wherever they are today, right now, especially going through this election, they can step in and empower themselves?
I think the fundamental thing is having a sense of power and control. Another way to say that is have some domain where you feel the possibility of mastery. And for me, I suffer a lot of defeats through my environmental work. That's a frustrating kind of day job to have. But there is a domain for me where I can feel a sense of mastery. So my amateur thing to do is I'm studying drumming, hand drumming, West African style drumming. And that is a domain where I can build up my skills a little bit each week and in the process feel a sense of mastery, or at least potential mastery. That's a domain where I have a sense of power and control. So no matter how bad it gets in that other place, I at least have this place of power and control, and it works. I feel good about that. So
that's awesome. I didn't expect that answer. That's a brilliant answer. I love that. Frank has a book out. It's called Activism is Medicine. Frank, what inspired you to write this book?
Oh, all kinds of things. Growing up as a young person, I got to witness the turmoil around the Vietnam War and the Cold War and Watergate and everything else that was happening during that era. That motivated me to have an interest in activism. And then I got involved in the health and fitness world and the martial art world, and I just felt like I had to be relevant in the world of politics and policy and legislation, all of these things. I had this craving to be relevant. And that's what led me to write the book, because health and fitness is one thing. That's great. That's an individual thing, but I think we have to be bigger than that, and we have to be players in the world.
How does Activision help us to grow personally, personal development, or become more resilient? How does Activision help us do that?
Well, activism, you could see it as a spiritual path. You could see it as an educational path too, because every time you expose yourself through activism, you learn something about yourself, you learn something about people, about policy, law, legislation, media, all these things that are part of it. And by pushing the envelope a little bit and taken some risks, you always learn. And this is what young people are up against now. They go to school, they're going to college, and a lot of times they're not receiving any instruction in how to be an activist, how to move the needle on the world. They go to their teachers, they go to their professors, and they say, look, activism is a form of education. When we do that, when we push the needle on the world, we're finding out about how the world works, and we're finding out about how we work too. So it's extremely powerful.
I love that. I love that a lot. And I think that it's a powerful message for right now. I believe that, again, you know, we've just experienced recently an election, and, you know, there's a lot of folks that are feeling, I know it was about 8 years ago. I felt disempowered when the election took place. And what did I do? I decided to start putting my voice in the world. I went on radio. I started getting on radio, started doing podcasts. I eventually got a radio show. Then I went to a podcasting. Then I went to TV. And I did all of that. All that happened as a result of my dissatisfaction with myself, because I felt like I wasn't making a difference. I felt like I was a victim of the system. And I felt like I was just stuck. So I went, well, what are my talents? And I thought, well, you know what? I'm pretty good at talking. I think I'll start a show. That's what I did. That was the activism part of it. That's what we're talking about here. On the screen, go ahead.
I just think this word activism is intimidating for a lot of people because they have a stereotype of somebody out on the street with a sign and a megaphone. And they say, well, that's not me. I'm not an angry person. But you have to open up that definition and look at activism in a broader way. So for your example or my example, I write books. You can do anything that attempts to move the needle on the world in some way. That can be a form of activism too. So I would say keep an open mind about what's
possible. Well, I think it's possible on all levels. I think of the Martha Stewart story where she just started out cooking and, you know, and she wanted, literally, she wanted to make a difference and, you know, bring different foods to people that really had never been exposed to them. I mean, that was her purpose in the beginning. I look at, people like even Steve Jobs. You know, he wanted to put a computer on in every home, right? I mean, they had purpose. They had drive. There was a reason. Now, you don't have to be Martha Stewart or Stewart or Steve Jobs. You know, the question I'd have for someone is, what do you love to do? And then I'd ask you to ask yourself this question. If I were courageous, what are three steps I would take around whatever that is? You know, it's just ask it every day until you start becoming, well, okay, I'm afraid to do this, but I think I'll just do it anyway. Yeah, I think it's a message.
Right.
Listen, on the screen, we have Frank's website. You can go and visit him, and there's a lot of resources there. It's humananimal.earth, humananimal.earth. That's a very easy-to-remember site, Frank. Very good.
Yeah, and it's all there. The books are there, and options for getting in touch with me, and there's a lot of free content on the site.
So cool. All right, listen. You know, some folks are listening to this, and they're inspired, but there's a place of complacency, or I'm really busy. I don't know if I can move forward with my dream or my goal. Let's talk about that a little bit. How do you overcome that?
Well, triage, I think, is a valuable idea because, and if you haven't heard of this word triage, this is what they do in the medical community in an emergency situation. Some people are going to get better. Some people are going to get worse. You focus on the people that really need your attention and can benefit from your attention. So that's triage. And you can approach your life the same way. There are some things that you just cannot deal with, some things that are going to get better on their own or are too trivial to worry about, and then work in the center. The other concept I take from an unlikely place, And that's the world of rock climbing, where Yvon Chouinard always used to talk about minimalism. And he says, look, you got to pare down your stuff, your technology, your tools, your ideas down to the bare minimum and focus on that. And that minimalist approach is really powerful. Get rid of all the surplus, focus on your most important possessions, people, ideas, and go with that. It takes a lot of work to do that, but it's super important.
Well, you know, you got to be doing something. You might as well be focusing on growing yourself, growing your community, you know, and contributing. That's kind of my thought. You know, my whole life really changed when I decided that I was going to dedicate my life to a life of service, to a life of supporting others to grow, to evolve, to become the best version of themselves. Everything changed for me because I had to get out of my own self to go support others. So I think there's a lot to that. You know, you have a holistic approach, which is what I love. You know, you're combining your studies, your martial arts, your education and health, and the evolutionary studies. How do you bring all that together in a activism approach?
Right. Well, bringing the body to it, I think, is crucial, because we don't give our bodies enough credit. And I think there's a mistrust and even a fear of our own bodies. This is something we learn in the martial arts, is to trust what the body is doing. And I do a lot of meditation, and that's fundamental, I think, to having a meditative practice. When you sit down and you're still for a while, it's not going to be long before the distractions start to come into your head. And that's just your body metabolizing your experience and your body doing what it does. And you have to give it permission to do that and just say, look, I trust you. You've got this huge evolutionary history behind you, and you're doing the best you can in this alien environment, this chaotic world. So I'm just going to trust you, and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be still. And after a while, the body responds to that. The body's like anybody else, you know, it wants to be listened to, it wants to be trusted. And after a while, you just calm down. And so now you can bring your refreshed body back to the battle at hand, whatever it is. I love that.
I love that. I love that a lot. You know, I'm also a decades long meditator, and I'm not sure how I would have ever gone through life without that. Only because the peace, the tranquility that I start my day and end my day with, it fuels everything, right? You know, I know that some folks out there, you know, they're very much in their head. They're very much thinking about the next thing that's going to go wrong, the next thing that's going to go wrong, or, you know, what they didn't do right, or, you know, they're in their head in that space. And I think if you're in your head in that space, it outpictures in your life, right? So if you're in a place where you're in a calm place, you start making decisions from a calm place. You walk into your environment. I bet if I walked into Frank's environment, I'd get a sense of peace there, because he's practiced peace in his life for many years. I think this is an impactful conversation. I believe that people can really benefit and learn from you, Frank. You know, I didn't get to ask you on your book, and we've only got a couple minutes left here, but I did want to ask you, what are some of the benefits of folks when they read your book? What will they walk away from?
Well, the book begins with a premise. I ask people to think about their encounter with what I call the knowledge. And the knowledge is simply the understanding that human impact on the planet right now is creating massive levels of harm, and it puts us in this really tragic predicament. That is the knowledge, and here is our encounter with the knowledge, and how do you respond to that encounter? Now, not everybody's had that encounter yet, but most of us have. So do you become an inactivist? Do you simply try and deny it out of existence? or do you take it seriously and try and move forward in a way that's relevant? And that's the premise of the whole book. So it's a challenge to people. I say, look, how are you going to respond to this encounter with the knowledge? And some people will welcome that challenge. Those will be my readers.
Yeah, I love it. Activism is Medicine. You can get it on Amazon and anywhere fine books are sold. So I hope you'll check out that book. It's powerful. One of the things that I'll mention too is that we have a summit coming up. I wanted to let you know about that, Frank. So we have a summit with Dr. Irvin Laszlo coming up. Dr. Irvin Laszlo has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice and written over 106 books. And this summit is playing on November 15th through the 18th. It's virtual. It's free. I want my listening audience to come in and listen to it. So you can go to Upshift Summit, UPSHIFT, Upshift, like upshifting your thinking, upshiftsummit.com, and find out about that. Frank, you've been an amazing guest. I didn't know what to expect with you. I'm very pleased that that we got together and you're able to share your wisdom with my audience. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Well, it's been a real pleasure.
All right. All my audience out there, you know, this show is for you, as I mentioned earlier. And the way we grow this show is with you. So I hope you will take me up on sharing it with your family, your friends, and those that you really care about so that we can all upshift our thinking and heal wherever we need to heal, whether it's mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. There is always a solution. Always, okay? And I think Frank mentioned this early on. You know, it's not the destination, it's the journey. And if you're on a healing quest, it's a journey. You will find the right people, places, and things. You always will, as long as you stay on the journey and don't give up. Never, 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 never give up, right? You've heard that a few times in your life. I hope you'll take it to heart when it comes to your healing journey. From my heart to yours, until next time, make sure to tune in to heal it. Take care.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.